Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined by the host with the most, the Hall of Fame of the Difference Maker, Mr. Tony Sager. Tony, how are you, sir?
Hey, Sean. It's great to be back on with you.
Thank you. And a very special guest talking about securing critical infrastructure in state and local government through AI adoption, Soledad of Google. Soledad, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Thank you. Soledad, could you just give us a quick minute intro about yourself and your role at Google?
Yeah, I'm a security advisor at the Office of the CISO in Google Cloud. And I advise in all security issues to the public sector.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. We've got a very, very important topic. And I know there's been work and sessions at the MSISEC annual meeting. There's been blog posts with respect to this convergence and looking at critical infrastructure and where we're seeing and where really Google is bringing AI adoption to the table. So we're looking at the threats to critical infrastructure. And we're seeing that nation state actors, hacktivists, others in that realm are actively targeting critical infrastructure. And not just particular elements of critical infrastructure, but basically all 16 sectors that are identified. So this includes water, energy, transportation. And this is not just in the realm of ransomware. This is disrupting the backbone of potentially society with these types of attacks. And they're extracting sensitive IP and really laying the groundwork and enumeration potentially for future attacks as well. So Soledad, in your work and what you're bringing to the table, where do you see those challenges and what do we have to do in order to overcome those challenges?
Yeah, sure. So first, I think we have to understand that the stakes are very high right now, and we have to look at how our cities and states actually operate, because there's been an evolution, right? So for a long time, we relied on a concept that was called security by obscurity, and our water plants, traffic stations, what we call OT or operational technology, was physically separated from networks and the internet. They were kind of air gapped. And they were safe because they were disconnected, or it required a physical presence, right, to disrupt. That era is way over, and to gain efficiency and also better data, we connected these sometimes legacy systems to our IT networks. So we created that convergence of IT and OT. Information technology and operational technology. And that brought modernization, but also created sometimes a bigger surface of attack, among other things, right? So we have taken infrastructure systems sometimes designed like 20 or 30 years ago without security in mind, not like the new systems we are creating today, and expose them to modern networks as we know them today. At the same time, the threat landscape has been shifting dramatically. So especially in the last few years. So we need to articulate this clearly. The threat has evolved also, not only the technology, but the threat landscape. So in the past, as you just mentioned, we worried about cyber criminals locking up data for a quick ransomware payout, for example. So that's still a threat. So we still have that. But right now we have also nation state actors, hacktivists, for example, also with a different goal in mind. So they are not just looking for money, but they are looking for leverage. And what that means is that threat actors are actively targeting our 16 critical infrastructure sectors, specifically water, energy, and transportation, which are the umbrella for the rest of the sectors. And we are seeing things like the ones you mentioned, extracting IP, which is intellectual property, stealing the blueprints of how our infrastructure works, laying the groundwork around prepositioning this malware, not to act now, but sit and wait, not to detonate now, but sit and wait, and aim for a bigger disruption and be able to stop the trains, turn off the lights, and contaminate water, whatever it is they are attacking at the moment, during a time that is going to create more disruption, right? So for state and local government, this is really a nightmare scenario, and you're sometimes defending against nation state capabilities, often, very often with municipal budgets and legacy environments that you cannot easily patch without, for example, shutting down services. So that's the summary of what we are seeing today.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it's a cascading problem, as you say. You know, we went from the air-gapped secure networks, really, and we want to go back to them, but we can't because they're interconnected, that this is a requirement now in order to manage modern operational technology infrastructure. But the convergence of putting that into an environment that already had prevalent threat is, again, devastating. And as you mentioned, I love the way you put that, you know, it's nation state budgets versus municipal defensive capability. That's not a fair fight. And it's really, you know, Tony, when I think about where we advocate and what we try to bring to the table to state, local, tribal, and territorial, and where we call maybe cyber underserved and trying to bring, you know, a level setting in terms of security control in that space. But I'd be interested in your thoughts, Tony, there, based on Soledad's comments.
I think Soledad, you know, characterizes the problem, I think, very nicely, which is, you know, we have systems that are way out of date. And these are not systems as part of a business where you could potentially generate enough income to modernize, or you know, or you're out of business. These are utilities, right? And things that are carefully regulated. There isn't really an income model. There's a tax model often that drives this. So there's no appetite to modernize, but the economics always wins. You know, the desire to be able to operate machinery, reconfigure it remotely, have fewer human beings have to touch machines in order to, you know, to get services out of them, brings them into this internet world. And I think that's you know, just inevitable, right? We're not turning the clock back on that. So you hit a couple of areas there. One is this, you know, so this population, you know, you're involved with a population that not everyone in cybersecurity gets to see. The interweave of state and local governments with all these vital infrastructures, but also get to see them in operation. And so you hinted at one, right? They have municipal size budgets. Any other things that you would characterize about the population of state local governments that affect their decision-making or their ability to respond?
There are many challenges, I think, right? And we are at a point in history that we really need to shift our mentality, especially around security operations, and definitely change from being reactive to way more proactive in order to overcome all these challenges and at the same time adopt the new technology that is coming our way. That, on the other hand, we have been praying for it for a long time, especially some of us that, you know, have worked on security operations on critical infrastructure for a long time. So we have a clear opportunity of overcome these challenges with new technology. And this is very hopeful right now. So especially around, you know, traditional OT networks that often lack comprehensive monitoring, makes a challenge to detect anomalous activity or the presence of malicious actors right? The limited visibility is always there. Alert fatigue, that's a very famous one. So the flood of noisy, very context poor data that is fed into our CMs or security stack, that doesn't, the vast amount of data that doesn't have proper pre-processing, which becomes inevitable to have the alert fatigue on our human analysts. The legacy systems and patching that we just talked about, the IT-OT convergence, you know, resource constraint, and the fact that we are seeing not only the threat landscape evolving, but also the complex attack vectors where adversaries are employing increasingly sophisticated and multi-layer, multi-stage attacks that combine digital and even, you know, physical elements, making detection and response more complex. And also, a thing that is always there, that is the compliance. Sometimes can be a burden and lead to, you know, a checkbox mentality rather than focus on true security posture improvement. All of that is our challenges to our critical infrastructure security, but we have an opportunity right now to solve or aid in a very notorious way those problems with, you know, technology like AI-driven security operations and cyber threat intelligence integrated in our security stack.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but I do want to pull on a couple threads that you'd mentioned. I think reactive to proactive, very, very important now with an AI-powered capability, threat intelligence, but also thinking of it from a strategic lens. So all that to come, we'll be right back.
Are you a U.S. state, local, tribal, or territorial government?
If so, you know just how difficult cyber defense can get.
You're the frontline defense against cyber threats, yet you don't have the shiny tools, big budget, or skilled talent of an enterprise.
Well, guess what? You don't need them.
You do need a community of like-minded folks to unlock the power of collective cybersecurity.
And that's the superpower of the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center.
The Multi-State ISAC provides cyber underserved organizations with protections they otherwise couldn't afford at a price that works for them.
But it's more than just access to services. It's access to a community of peers where your participation protects them and theirs protects you.
Not to mention access to the 24/7/365 CIS Security Operations Center as your full-time public sector cybersecurity partner.
Available as a single organization or state or territory-wide option, the MSISAC membership provides threat intelligence, monitoring, and more to fortify your cyber defense.
Become a member today by visiting cisecurity.org/ms-isac.
So we're back. Soledad, one of the things you mentioned was intelligence-driven types of approaches. And I think that's very important to contextualize, as you've mentioned earlier, from an operational technology perspective, that there are many different vectors of attack. The medium in which they use different attack methodology has changed, respectfully, due to the OT environments being connected to the internet. And we need to really meet that in kind with reactions both from alerts, but really now getting down to a hunting perspective in these environments, searching for potential tactics, techniques, and procedures, really now starting to look at different sectors as well, because there's different targets and different capabilities in each of the 16 sectors that we've mentioned. So where do you see CTI as a foundation? How does AI bring new elements into this space?
So CTI has always been something that we have used around securing critical infrastructure, right? But right now, it's the most important thing to have, because what you just mentioned, the way threats have evolved and, you know, all the tactics, techniques, and procedures that can change from one day to the other. We have 0 days every day in these times. And it's become paramount to have information in advance of what is happening, what others in your sectors are experiencing, what is coming your way, right? If you see your neighbor is being attacked, you want to learn from that so you can defend, right? So, and having that in an automated way, taking advantage of all the technology that is advancing right now, it's becoming the thing to do, right? So the way we integrate cyber threat intelligence, we can say it's a proactive edge by offering insights into many things. For example, making way faster the detection and response, it will allow you to have informed threat hunting, as you mentioned, by providing a lot of information around the TTPs and IOCs, right? We'll make better detection by improving the accuracy of the detection rules that you are implementing on your SIEM, for example. Things like vulnerability management helps prioritizing and focusing on risk instead of simple vulnerability scores. What you really need, especially if you are dealing with budget constraints. And so these advances are allowing it also to support a strategic decisions, and they provide context for further making security investments, right, and architectural choices. So it's making the security posture not only better, but it's making sure that it will keep improving. So I think we are in a very interesting time in history, and but definitely we need to think about, you know, how to activate all this technology that we have.
Yeah, I mean, your point's all about this. Is well taken. You know, in some sense, right, it's often the bad guys that adopt new technology first because they're unconstrained by, in some sense, budgets. They certainly don't worry about disappointed users or policies that the system owner has to worry about. And that allows them to build your point about complicated sort of multi-stage kinds of attacks. You know, having spent my time in government, those can be expensive to develop and can be fragile. But if you can generate them rapidly with many paths, which you can do with modern technology now, you give the attacker a big advantage. And then you switch to the defensive challenge. You know, all those pieces of, or I think almost all those pieces of information you talked about are kind of there, but there's so many, there's so much fatigue, you know, there's so much work of trying to moving the data, getting it in the hands of people that can use it. That's where technology on defense could really give us an opportunity to go much faster and then provide. Yeah, and the key part, as you said, this is not I solve it or I don't. I have an economic issue. I have to present to the boss. I need to prioritize action, right? And do I have an intelligent way to do that? Well, here's what the threats are doing. Here's where my attack surface looks like, and I have an intelligent way to balance all that. So I think, I'm with you. I'm excited by the opportunities to make the defenders more powerful. In some sense, right, the defender should have what's called in sports the home field advantage, right? They own the IT. They should be able to do things quicker with it. But it turns out the opposite has historically been true because of the complexity of technology and the constraints and all that.
You're absolutely right. Like cyber threat intelligence has always been there, but you know, we used to do it everything manually, right? You will have a report of TTPs and IOCs. Not only the transmission of that data to get to you was slow, but also, you know, the way you will, you know, deploy that to your system so that your security stack becomes aware of them. Everything was very manually. So that's the piece that it's been evolving. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And then you as a service provider, right, you get to see this at very large scale and in effect, take all that intelligence and embed it at a more powerful level, right? Rather than every system administrator. And I think that's, again, that gives us hope for defense, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's what I mentioned. It's like what is happening now is things that we were praying for, you know, for them to happen like for many years. Like every single burden on, you know, that analysts have. How do I process this report quicker? Or how do I make this incident response report quicker? Things that right now are being solved in a way that it allows you as a security operations analyst, for example, to focus on way more strategic and important defense tasks, right? So,
completely agree.
I'm very passionate about everything that is happening, yes.
Yes. Well, like you say, it's an amazing time to be part of this industry. Again, Antonio and I joke when we have, you know, these types of conversations is, you know, AI is practically in everything. But where we see the catalyst here, and I think there's really three areas just to identify, at least in the scope of the context of what we're discussing in terms of, as you mentioned before, vulnerability management, incident response, but that predictive element. I think now starting to take the data, what you've seen, again, from the scale which you're able to see it, bringing that to both global trends, predictive elements that you're seeing, again, from the neighbor, and these types of attacks starting that can problemate through many, many different vectors with other customers. And that then helps, you know, the preemptive hardening, really getting down to the asset criticality and building layers of defensive capability that, again, give us that home field advantage to Tony's point. But your thoughts there, Soledad?
I think definitely these technologies are acting as an impulse to your capabilities, which, again, coming back to the municipal budgets, is really very helpful, right, for a person that is trying to defend what is the most important infrastructures for our society and is constrained by budget and also talent, right? To have technologies that are going to make everything faster, especially minimizing or bringing way down things like, you know, detection, the amount of time we take to detect maliciousness in our network and also to respond to that. I think it's extremely important to have things like AI algorithms to analyze vast telemetry data, to spot potential threats, zero-day malware, that sometimes our traditional rule-based systems might miss. Particularly useful for identifying activity in complex OT and ICS, industrial control systems environments, or coming back again to the reduction of false positives, right? Well, the alerts are the same. It's not a reduction on alerts, but the false positives that is helping analysts fight this alert fatigue. So learning, you know, unique signatures of behavior within specific environments, AI systems now can become very highly effective at separating, you know, like genuine or legit threats from benign anomalies. For example, then again, faster response and analysis, prioritizing alerts, predicting, you know, if you have historical data and attacker methodologies, global threat trends, everything, you know, ingested by CTI, AI models can forecast future security incidents, taking into account your environment, your network topology, et cetera, right? So all of that, all of those tasks that we used to do manually and take you months and even years to fine-tune and refine our security stacks and tooling and posture is becoming way, I would say, it's not that it's becoming easier because we still are adapting to the technology, but way faster, right? So I think that's key. And looking forward, because what we are seeing, we're already seeing the future. So while full autonomy in environments like operational technology should be approached with caution, AI can accelerate responses using predefined, you know, playbooks and runbooks. So we are always going to need the human in the loop, but we can see in the future now how this technology is going to evolve even further with the use of agentic AI and all of that.
Absolutely agree. Well, I mean, from a strategic perspective, one of the elements, and you hit on it there, was the human in the loop process, completely required, because one of the things I've seen in dealing with OT is there a translation engine between information security and engineering, from a systems, whatever type of engineering, to integrate certain capabilities. And it feels like in that loop, there's still a requirement, one, to understand the underlying systems, the criticality of the assets, so the risk-based approach that you'd mentioned earlier, and then allowing this to continue down a path that leads us to automation. We will embrace it, but I don't think it's, you know, it's a flick of a switch. This is something that we want to build cooperatively through IT, OT, and that convergence, allowing us to get to a place that really is succinct, and we can now trust these underlying processes. That's going to take some trial and error and time. And I just want to get your thoughts there, if that aligns with your thinking.
I think in critical infrastructure, we don't have the luxury of making mistakes. That's the thing. Yeah. So especially in environments that are OT, operational technology, the cost of a mistake isn't just server crash, right? It can be physical safety, it can be public health. And that is why our strategic implementation should be built entirely around the concept of human in the loop for CI, critical infrastructure. So I think start by letting the AI handle the data work that burns out your human analysts the most. And if you think about it, it's not the first time we have to implement new technology. More or less the process still the same, but it's that we have way more now and way more capabilities, right? But we have always deployed new technology in security the same way, like with cautions at first, a lot of testing, mm-hmm. with human in the loop, until you have an amount of trust that you're comfortable with to let things run on your security stack with less supervision. So this is the same, right? So start with things like, for example, when an alert fires, let AI automatically look the IP reputation, check the asset history, pull the vulnerability report for context, or manage things like triage. Let AI group related alerts together so an analyst sees one incident instead of 50 pings. And this is high value time saving. It will at the beginning, it will touch nothing in the physical world. So it's still very safe. When we face something that is a high impact decision, like shutting down or isolating a substation or a chemical bomb, the human must remain the final authority. So the AI job is to present the evidence and help with, you know, certainty of either malicious activity or potential incidents, or even see or even aid with your threat modeling and, you know, see what is coming in the future. But what it's going to allow is to act with the speed of AI, but the judgment of experienced operators. So we keep the human in charge until the trust in these systems is absolute. Make sense?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, it does. Because, had a career where I've got to have oversight of a number of watch centers. And that, you know, the overwhelming amount of data. But at the end of the day, you know, humans have, at least up to this point, irreplaceable skills in things like intuition, judgment, and ability to sort of balance risk and confidence. But if they're drowning in alert fatigue and they can't see it, or they can't see outside their own borders, right past their own perimeter, they can't put it into context. So the ability to bring that together to take advantage, right, to empower human judgment, not to replace it. So I guess good news for anyone who works in this area, there's still work to be done for the foreseeable future here. But also, absolutely. I think, and you talked about this earlier, Soledad, you know, there's an old saying, I forget exactly, but in the security, right? You know, each defender is protecting his turf, but the attacker is attacking the whole system. And so, you know, an individual attack is a problem for that system owner, but it's often part of a larger campaign of putting in place infrastructure or, you know, looking for victims and so forth. And typically, individual system administrators don't have access. They can't see themselves as part of this, what the attacker is really doing. And the ability to correlate this vast quantities of information, have a model that says, this is not a lone attack, this is part of an infrastructure creation by a particular nation state, is just provides us an opportunity, I think, for great advantage in defense. And I think, you know, that as you can bring that picture together, not every system owner has to see it identically, but as a nation, a national level, at a ecosystem level, we have to be able to understand, you know, that because it prioritizes it differently and helps us all decide how do we, you know, we're defending ourselves, but we need to do our part to defend the collective. So I think that's, you know, you talked about that a couple of times. I think that's really on the mark for one of the key things that we need from newer technology.
Yeah, exactly. Especially defending critical infrastructure where Sean mentioned at the very beginning, there's a cascading effect, right? So if you're protecting your power grid, you're protecting the rest, basically the rest of the 16 sectors.
Yeah, people sometimes forget that critical means something, right? They were not arbitrarily chosen. You know, if you want to see the public panic, right, get people to worry about the quality of their water or their food or the availability of medical services, et cetera, you know, it's both the potential specific effects, destruction or theft, but also it's public confidence. And I think that's another role for the human in the loop, right? We expect that there's a human being well-equipped of sound judgment that decides, you know, this water is safe to drink, or you know, this road is safe to drive on. I think that as social creatures, we also need that. And again, I think technology is not about replacing judgment. It's about empowering, I think, the people that will make those calls for us.
Definitely. And I think a huge advantage that we have in this time of history is that this is not our first rodeo. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of experience from the past. Security has been an important focus around government for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. So we are equipped to understand what is needed and adapt to this new technology in our advantage.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing that we'll just close on with this, Soledad, is utility of the cloud, I think, allows us with simulating environments and building out infrastructure in that space to start to test and build that trust, you know, with the human in the loop, and we're going through that expertise, but where the cloud kind of gives us an opportunity to test those scenarios and build capability and build that trust over time. I just want to get your opinion. How the cloud is now critical for resiliency in the space.
So there's been a lot of, one thing that we know for sure is that the future of security operations for CI will, without a doubt, see continued evolution, driven by technology or technological advancements and the persistent threat landscape or evolving landscape. So around cloud infrastructure adoption, while the migration of core OT systems to the cloud has been cautious, the benefits of cloud infrastructure for security operations are becoming clearer, right? So cloud platforms offer unparalleled scalability, flexibility, and access to advanced security services, including advanced analytics, threat intelligence, feed the access to CTI, and also AI capabilities. So as cloud security models mature and the concept of hybrid cloud deployments become more and more prevalent, CI operators will increasingly leverage the cloud for security data aggregation, for example, analysis management, and making their ability to monitor and defend their environments better without even compromising operational technology. So there's a key point here, moving forward or thinking forward about cloud adoption and everything around improving resilience, right, and recovery for CI, which is very important. So the cloud inherent resilience features such as geographically dispersed data centers, redundant systems, and robust backups that CI can take advantage of that offer a significant opportunity to improve their resilience and recovery for CI and OT systems, leveraging all these cloud capabilities for things like backups, configuration files, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Wonderful. Soledad, again, thank you so much for being on the show, your support of the MSISEC annual meeting, and the continued development to support state and local organizations. It's absolutely great to talk to you. And Tony, thank you as always, sir. Much appreciated.
Always my pleasure. Yeah, and thank you, Soledad. Appreciate being here.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for all the work you do at MSISEC.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you to our audience. Any questions, comments, concerns, podcasts at cisecurity.org. Catch us on YouTube at The CI Security. Remember to subscribe through your preferred podcast provider. And with that, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.